podcast is with Scott Davis. Hello and welcome. I'm so excited to be talking to you today. Scott is the founder of From the Rooftops, which is a Portland agency that specializes in effective brand architecture, new product and service launches, brand strategy and messaging. He's worked with firms ranging from small local startups to large companies such as Vestas, the Smithsonian, and Safe Corporation. Welcome, Scott, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So today, I really wanted to focus on small business owners and helping them kind of give them tools to help with branding and messaging and positioning within their own industries. I think that I've had many clients that, you know, because of social media, they're forced to really kind of re-examine these issues, these kind of big issues, their brand and how they want to dialogue with their customer. So this is your specialty, and so I'm going to just go ahead and kind of let you kind of start off giving us some insight into how you would initially walk through kind of your process when you start engaging with a client around those issues.
Sure, that's easy enough. I mean, I think for any brand or company, whether they're just starting out brand new or are, as you were saying, rethinking kind of who they are and where they go from here, I think it's really the same challenge, and it's one that businesses, you know, my business included, don't really spend enough time on, which is really defining, you know, who they are as a company. I mean, most of us, when we start a company of our own, we have a great understanding of that internally. We kind of know why we're doing what we're doing. You know, but articulating it is a total other issue. And for most companies, that's where they run into trouble, is because they don't tell their story well, because they don't focus enough energy on actually defining what that story is. So really, I think for most companies, it comes down to kind of three key questions, those being, who are you as a brand? What do you mean, or what do you stand for? And why do you matter? And the third one in particular, I think, is one that a lot of companies struggle with, because that's kind of the, you know, who are you and why should I care test, which is, you know, why do you matter to a customer? Why do you matter to a potential customer? What makes you special or different and really unique in the marketplace? Most entrepreneurs, most startups, most people who own a business can tell you the first couple really well. They can talk all day about who they are, why they started the business, you know, what they stand for, what they care about personally, what they think their company cares about. But when you get to the third, and it's really a matter of, okay, well, why does that matter to your customer? Why does that matter to the market? Why is that different? Why is that special? That's where a lot of companies struggle. So where I help companies usually starts with defining those three questions and focusing in, you know, pretty heavy on the third. And, you know, the process I use, or the roadmap I use to get to those answers, it's pretty simple, really, on the surface. And I mean, every consultant who, you know, is worth anything has their own model of why they do or what they do. But for me, it's kind of what I call the triangulation of branding. It's sort of taking three known things and then figuring out where you fit in relation to those three things. So the first one is your company, the second one is your customer, and the third one is the market. So kind of to walk you through a little bit each one of those, I mean, the first one being your company, that's really what a lot of business owners know pretty well. It's sort of that, like I was talking about, it's who are you as a company? What do you do? What do you offer? Those kind of things. The second one, your customer, I mean, simple enough, but, you know, who are you serving? What matters to them? You know, what do prospects or other people who aren't customers yet, what do they want from you potentially? And then the third is the market. So this is where your competitors come into the equation, the rest of the industry, the media, et cetera, and it's how do you differentiate? How do you stand out from the other people who might do something exactly like you or something similar to what you do. And and then you know, if you think about this as a triangle where you have your company at the top, you've got your customer, you know, to the left and the market to the right, it's really a matter then for branding of defining sort of where you fit in the middle of that triangle. Because there's a sweet spot there where what you stand for as a company aligns with what your customers care about, and that aligns with an open position, if you will, in the marketplace, the position where your competitors aren't. Because if you're saying the exact same thing as your competitors, you're probably going to be in trouble. I mean, depending on whether you have the budget to sort of out-scream them, if you will, right?
Right.
So finding that sweet spot where you know, your internal view as a company aligns with what your customers care about, and that aligns with where there's an opportunity in the market.
Okay, so you've brought so much great information. So I just want to back up. So starting off with the questions, who are you as a brand? That was the first question. Mm-hmm. And what was the second question?
What do you mean, or what do you stand for?
What do you mean, or what do you stand for?
Yeah.
So is that sort of like a mission statement?
Yeah, it's values. I mean, if you think about this in terms of what you might articulate on paper, it's corporate values, it's those things, it's your mission, it's your vision, it's really what, if I'm looking at you as a company, as an outsider or a potential customer, it's why do you matter to me in a way, but it's really what makes you authentic or true to who you are. It's like what, whereas who you are is your personality. It's kind of you as a person, right? But it's not going so far as to say sort of your political affiliations or your concerns or your cares or whatever. But blending those first two together is sort of the magic in terms of like you as a person. So you might have certain values, like you care for people and you care for education or those kind of things. If you think about it as a person, you know, you, the first question, who you are, that's you by name.
So when you're thinking about applying this to your business, so a person who is thinking about their brand, these first questions are sort of the more emotional, you know, what do you want your brand to represent?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Then
from an internal perspective.
From an internal perspective, and then do you, what you stand for as a company. So.
Mm-hmm.
Are these questions just kind of open-ended big questions? Do they ultimately, do people thinking about this need to think about, you know, their overall business objectives, or are these more, we're talking kind of more kind of the emotional stuff in there?
It's really more, it tends to be more emotional, certainly for startups and small businesses. You know, it's the reason why you started this business.
Exactly.
It's why you do what you do. At some point, you know, a company gets to a certain size, and then this demonstrates the value of the third question. But at some, you know, every company at some point ends up caring about quality and about integrity and about customer service and those kind of things. And
or at least they say they
and
do.
And when they truly do, those are great. But they're not differentiating. They're just like everybody else. So, but it's those kind of things. It's like. You know, I'm trying to think of a great startup example, but, you know, who you are is the name of your company, what the product you sell, the service you offer, whatever it is, but it's pretty sort of basic nuts and bolts, like, you know, this is who we are and what we do. Then what you stand for is really where you start to differentiate and tell your true story, your sort of story of authenticity about what makes you who you are, right? And on a deeper level. And it's what you care about. It's why you do what you do, not just what you do.
Excellent. And then the third question, why do you matter?
Yeah, and this is the hardest one for people, because this is the one that's always, it requires an entrepreneur or a business owner, et cetera, to really think about everything that's in their hearts from a someone else's perspective, you know? I mean, I care about what I care about, but when I have to convince you that what I care about is relevant, that's when it gets tougher. So, yeah, so that's where differentiation really comes into the equation, because if I'm a potential customer, like, I need to understand the value you offer that makes you different than, you know, company B.
Right.
You know.
Good. So that's perfect. That's the explanation I was looking for. And so then that moves us down into this the next kind of phase here that you were talking about, company, customer, and market.
Mm-hmm. Because that first set of questions is really, it can generate a lot of possibilities. I mean, I think you said, is this just a big, you know, open-ended philosophical question? And to some extent it is. Like, a lot of companies care about a lot of things. I mean, if you challenge me to name my values, I'd be hard-pressed to stop at a dozen, because there's so many of them potentially. So really then, you know, once you have all that defined, you have to wrestle with, you know, what you actually say to the outside world. You know, you care about a lot of stuff, but maybe it's only one thing that matters to your customers, or maybe it's a couple things. And really, as marketers, we're lucky if we get the chance to, you know, tell people three things about us, let alone one or two. So which of those sort of big question, why do you matter sort of answers is most relevant? And so that's where I found that this triangulation model sort of helps drill down to that next level, because somewhere in that, the middle of that triangle between what your company cares about, what your customer is looking for, and what the market opportunity is a magic sort of spot for your brand, right?
Right, and I'm drawing now in space this, like, this perfect image that we can, maybe we can create a mm-hmm, graphic,
mm-hmm.
But exactly, so you find that kind of the place where all three of those components come together in terms of the company, the customer, and the market, so that you, again, you find that overlapping place, which I love that visual. And it, in terms of kind of exploring and finding, you know, finding that, it's just, you know, how do you do that? Right?
Sure.
That's the million dollar
mm-hmm.
question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you, I'm sure it comes from answering these questions that you've outlined, but there must be other avenues, tools, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, so thinking again about the three being company, customer, and market. So company's the easy one, like we talked about. That's really that internal wrestling with who we are and what we care about. Customer, it's as simple as asking, you know, talking to your customers, doing a little bit of research, whether that's a survey among all your customers, or, you know, you mentioned social media in your introduction. Social media is brilliant for that purpose, because you can sit back and watch and see what your prospects and customers are saying, what they're talking about. And there's that opportunity for two-way engagement with them, because, you know, you have access to them now through social media tools. So, but it doesn't have to be social media. It could be a basic survey. It could be a focus group. It could be, if you own a retail shop, it could be just when customers come into your store, ask you what brings you in today, what, you know, like, tell me a little bit about, you know, what prompted you to come here? What do you like about us? Those kind of questions, right? So that one, again, is pretty easy. And then the third one being the market, it's as simple as figuring out who you think your competition is and then checking them out. I mean, seeing what they're talking about. You know, I work with a company right now in the wind industry, and we've gone through some of these issues. And for them, you know, they're competing with the likes of GE. GE has a bazillion-dollar marketing budget. So if my client was to go out and try to say the exact same thing as GE, they would be dead in the water, because GE can outspend them 10 to 1. So for most small businesses, it's the same thing. You probably have one competitor. I mean, thinking, just picking another example, New Seasons. New Seasons is competing with Whole Foods mm-hmm. and that other one. Anyway, but they, you know, Whole Foods is a big national company with a big marketing budget. So they don't want to stand for the exact same thing as Whole Foods, because then, you know, Whole Foods can easily, you know, reach you more times than New Seasons can in terms of advertising or any of those things. So that's kind of the third piece. And that one is really as simple as as checking out their websites, you know, looking at your competitors. If you're lucky enough and they have a retail shop, go into the retail shop and check it out and see what it's like. And look for brochures, look for advertisements, you know, in the newspaper or whatever from that competitor, and figure out, or do the best you can at figuring out what you think they care about. You know, answer all these questions from their perspective. Because in doing that, then you understand what they're trying to own as a company. And ideally, you don't want to own the same thing, you know, unless you can absolutely 100% do it better every time, you know.
And I think that, so, I think that's a great point. So in terms of when you are kind of looking at competitors, and you find competitors that are doing what you do, maybe they do something similar. I think that the common kind of knee-jerk reaction is like, okay, I'm going to do what they do, but I'm going to do it so much better. And I think it's important to maybe realize that you need to assess what your competitors are doing and what they're doing well, and then say, okay, what am I going to offer that's going to be different?
Sure.
I mean, is that... Yeah. I mean, you know, how would you define how to kind of deal with analyzing your competitors and what you need to do to differentiate yourself, I guess,
sure.
is the question.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's not necessarily as simple as figuring out what to do different or what to do better, because, again, I think a lot of businesses have something that is truly unique about them, like whether it's what's burning in the founder's guts. I mean, it's what inspired them to start their business. So there usually is a unique story in there somewhere. But when it comes to marketing, most business owners and even marketers tend to fall back on the same sort of messages.
Absolutely.
So it's figuring out how to make those messages unique, but also true to who you are, because it's really, the magic comes when the words are slightly different, but really the experience and the stories that go with those messages are truly unique and different than what other people are doing out there. So, I mean, again, I don't... In terms of figuring out what those are, what your competitors are doing, I mean, I mentioned the retail shop, you know, just Google your competitors by name, look at their websites. Another great research tool is Multnomah County Library. So I was lucky enough when I was working with the Smithsonian to have lunch with the head librarian of the Library of Congress, and she out in Washington, D.C., and she, the first thing she says to me when she knows I'm from Portland is, wow, Multnomah County Library System is among the top two or three library systems in the country. And it's true, and as any card-carrying member, and this is one of my sort of magical research techniques that I'm sad I'm sharing it with you, but in fact, it's incredibly powerful. The number of databases and news articles and all of these things that are available on the Multnomah County Library website are extraordinary. And from anywhere, from your home, if you have a library card, you can log onto the website and you can look at every database imaginable and just search those for your competitors' names, for your own name. You know, find out everything you can, because in those articles you learn so much about these businesses and what they're about and how big they are, and, you know, all the stuff that's hard to find out, you know, or used to be hard to find out. It's not anymore. So that's really helpful in terms of figuring out what your competitor is trying to own. So, but I think that's an important distinction. Back to your point about, or your question about, you know, is it about just trying to figure out how to do something different, or many businesses just try to do something better? You know, it's important to think about a brand as you know, something that lives in the hearts and guts and minds of people, you know? And if you're trying to convince someone that you're better than another company, then you better demonstrate it.
Right.
And you better prove it at every possible opportunity. And that's where some companies struggle, because they think they can out-innovate GE, mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they don't have the proof points to actually demonstrate it to a customer, you know, and you have to convince them of that. You have to show that you're better whenever you can. So that's why finding this blend of what, you know, is sort of powerful in your own story about why you started this business and what you're trying to do with it meets with you know, what your competitors are doing and in a way where you can and must find something unique and a powerful individual story that's yours and yours alone.
Great. So we've touched a little bit on social media, and I ask you this question then: how do you advise clients to best use social media outlets to distribute their message, and sure. Do you recommend it?
Yes.
That was a sigh.
Yes, it's far and away, I mean, at least in my time, it's like the biggest revolution in terms of a marketer's ability to really tell their story effectively. I sigh because there's a lot of instances where it's done wrong and where it's not, where a company will jump into it and not really know what they're getting into. And, you know, my biggest advice for a company ever is to, if you think it might be something you want to do, just sit back and watch for a while and listen. I mean, you really have to listen. And these tools that are out there, you know, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, are incredibly powerful for listening. You can literally identify potential customers. You can watch their conversations take place, and through that process you can really define what it is they would like you to offer to the conversation. But don't jump into the conversation until you have an understanding of that, because, you know, far too many on vehicles like Twitter are just talking and not listening, not interested in two-way dialogue or any of that. And that for me is really where the power of social media, you know, lies, is in dialogue, in two-way dialogue. But that, for some companies, is just a huge can of worms, because once you open that two-way dialogue, you can't really close it.
Right, right.
Once customers know that they can and should expect to reach you via Twitter, they're going to.
Right, right.
And how you answer and address and engage back with them, you know, is it will make or break you. It can, certainly, depending on what company. So, you know, I think it's right for everybody, but you really have to commit the time to do it right and to listen for a while before you really jump in with both feet.
And that, then, do you have any good examples of people that have jumped in and maybe made a mistake and needed to kind of, you know, backpedal?
Gosh, I mean, in social media per se, I haven't. I mean, a great example is the car industry, and especially the big three here in Detroit. They've done some great things in social media now, but sort of on a bigger picture level, ultimately, the failures that you would have in social media are the same failures they have. They failed to listen. They failed to innovate. They failed to deliver products, cars that we wanted, that people wanted. And in social media, it's the same thing. I mean, it really is. Like, if you're trying to be one thing in social media and it doesn't align with what customers, prospects, etc., would expect from you, it doesn't work, and it can backfire. I mean, when this social media thing was really blossoming, and in particular, like, the video contests were blossoming, you know, GM, I think it was, made a huge faux pas by thinking they could just do another make-your-own customer video and get some free advertising out of the deal, and a bunch of anti-SUV, you know, enthusiasts saw that as an opportunity to spread their message, so they created ads about how bad for the environment all these SUVs were, and there was no control mechanism in place to ensure that those weren't just spread everywhere. And, I mean, that was a minor misstep compared to sort of the bigger picture misstep that the automakers made in not listening to customers, but it's similar. I mean, it's indicative of the problem, I guess.
Do you have any thoughts as to why so many of these larger corporations? I think that that's a common thread that you hear that they aren't listening, or I mean they have money to spend. They're not obviously cash poor. Why do you think it's so hard for them to be able to really tap into what their customers want?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's fear and it's lack of control. For the bigger you get, the harder it is to control the message. And, that's one of the challenges with social media is that you either empower your organization to be in social media or you don't. But as soon as you do, then you lose, quote unquote, control. And that's tough for them. The other is just how time consuming it is. I mean, you can't just... Most corporate responses to things like social media are, oh, we need a person in charge of that. Well, I think Ford has a person in charge of social media that I follow. He does a pretty good job, but at some point, depending on the organization, it's going to completely overwhelm one person if they're that big. But it is time-consuming. I mean, listening to your customers is a full-time job for every person in your organization, and they have other jobs to do, too, so...
So what's your view on companies that are looking to outsource social media management?
Gosh. For me, at least, the jury's still out on that. Like, I've seen it work in some instances. I think the most powerful examples are one where your customers and constituents care so much about your brand that they outsource for you without you having to actually do it yourself. Because the ones who, just treat it as a tweeter for hire kind of a thing, it's very hard to control the message. And really, it can often sort of come across as BS because it's someone... who doesn't know your brand inside and out necessarily, trying to be you, trying to represent you. And it's, it feels, just on the surface to me, it feels a little dirty. It feels a little inauthentic. But I know it can work. I mean, as long as people are upfront and open about it, I know a number of sort of the gurus of social media, like Chris Brogan, he's sponsored by a number of companies, and he does blog posts and tweets and all of these things on their behalf, and it can work. I mean, if you're just open about it and you treat it as what it is, it works okay. But it's the ones where they misrepresent the relationship. They try to make it seem like it's an internal person and it's not, or whatever. Those sort of turn me off. Certainly, I don't have any evidence that they've backfired to any great degree, but my personal inclination is that they do. But really, what I'm about is building brands that so inspire your customers that they sing your praises for you. I mean, that's where the name From the Rooftops, the name of my company, came from. Is that a company should be so great that their customers want to climb up on the nearest roof and tell everyone how much they love them,
Right.
Because they're so inspired by the brand, they're so inspired by the products or the service or the people or whatever it is that they want everyone to know, And that's really where the magic of social media can come, is when you so inspire people to be advocates on your behalf that it just explodes, just takes off.
Right. I mean, I think everybody, all of us, want that. I mean, that's like kind of the holy grail of being able to have people out there who are your brand advocates and who, are so loyal and that just comes down to excelling at whatever
totally,
it is.
Totally.
And whether it
That's
be
what's hard about it. You can't buy your way out of it. No, I mean, you really can't. I mean, you have to just be true to who you are. You have to stand for something different. And you have to be able to communicate what makes you special and different, And through that process of just being and just existing as a brand or a company, that's when you, you know, inspire this kind of loyalty and this kind of evangelism that the greatest brands in the world have, you know?
Right.
You just do what you do and you focus and you stand for something, and hell or high water, that's what you are, man. And it works. You know? I'm preaching now.
So let me ask you this. I think there are a lot of people out there who, you know, they're eager to get involved with the social media thing. They're eager to kind of get the word out, but they probably, you know, don't have a grasp on these questions that you've outlined. They don't have, you know, maybe a hold on what their messaging should be. How important is it for them to get it right, you know, right off the bat? What would your advice be? Do you advise them? I mean, obviously you said listen, but how important is it for them to really, you know, maybe invest in services to kind of help them craft the message before they put their foot in the water, so to speak?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, my experience has been that people are pretty forgiving customers. Like, as long as you're not misleading, as long as you're not trying to be something that you're not, or saying you care about customer service and then delivering crappy customer service, for example, like, unless there's this clear example of you just, like, not being true to who you say you are, you can change. You can be different things. I mean, honestly, most companies, I mean, through this process that I've talked about, you know, especially when you're thinking about a startup or a small business, there are many different answers to the question, what do you care about? You know, what do you stand for? So it takes some tinkering. I mean, at the beginning especially, like, you know, test some different messages, test and figure out what resonates. And, you know, online, as you know, with tools like Google Analytics, with you know, just even just tracking your fans if you start a Facebook page, there's ways to know if a certain message is working or not, and then tweaking it. As long as you're not totally from one day to the next, like, shifting who you say you are, as long as there's a core there that stays the same, you know, it's not hard to change. And more times than not, it's that as long as you are, again, sticking to that core of, like, who we are, why we matter, what we care about, that kind of thing, the shifts that you're talking about making are pretty minor. It's wordsmithing. It's, you know, it's for most companies, they have multiple things, and they can just sort of pick and choose and see what works, and it's okay. I mean, and as long as you're not called out as being, you know, a BS artist or whatever, it's okay. And most companies are small enough, at least at the stage when they're tinkering like that, that it's safe. I mean,
So do you think that most companies, I mean, in your experience, do you feel that companies are in a position, or company owners are specifically thinking about small businesses, where typically it might be a sole proprietorship, or it's maybe one or two people, are these people in a position where they can go out there and craft the message themselves? They're so close to the message. Is there I feel that there's sometimes that's an obstacle because they're so close to it that it's hard for them to craft their own message in a way that's going to really tell the story. Do you find that? Do you find that they are the best advocates? Do they need, you know, help crafting the message? Or what is your experience with that? Because I think that sometimes that an owner is so gung-ho or so kind of locked into their own, you know, perspective that it's hard for them to get out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to believe that, no, it's not that hard, but typically it is. I mean, typically it takes someone who cares passionately about your customer, so passionately about your customer that that's the viewpoint that they want more than your CEO or your founder or whatever. So, because oftentimes, like you said, CEOs, founders, etc., are so convinced, you know, they're the true believer if there is one.
Right.
Because the process of starting a business is such that by the time you're successful enough to have employees and customers, you've had to sell yourself so many times that you don't know any other way. I mean, and that's oversimplifying it a little bit, but because I think I definitely have seen some CEOs and founders who can do it. But for most, having sort of the a powerful person to sort of butt heads with. I mean, when I go into a lot of companies, I consider myself nothing more than an advocate for the customer.
Yes.
Because the internal, you know, belief is so strong, and not right or wrong, but it is. And so having someone who can be an outsider come in and just butt heads with the organization and do a little research and say, well, you say you care about innovation, but I talked to five of your customers, and every one of them said that you're nowhere near the most innovative company in your industry.
Wow.
You know, like, those kind of interactions are critical for brands and for companies.
Right.
Who are trying to grow, you know, beyond what initial business they have as a startup, for example. But there are some who can do it on their own. You know, it just takes that sort of, that inner passion for the customer experience and for the customer, that you can really sort of blend your own personal attitudes with the desires and wants of your customers and put in place the structures to actually measure what your customers say they want and care about, and then figure out how to reconcile that with what you offer.
Great. Kind of wrapping things up, do you maybe want to talk about, could some of my listeners hire you for consulting? Is that something that you're
Certainly.
Doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm flexible. I do both hourly consulting and project-based consulting. Depending on the project, sometimes it's more affordable for the customer to do like a flat project fee, or hourly, one or the other, just depends. But I'm totally flexible for both of them, and sometimes I even structure trade arrangements, so just depends.
Very good. Excellent. And before we turned on the microphone here, you were telling me about some other interesting projects that you were involved with, so love for you to kind of give some insight into your other projects you've got going on.
Sure. Christmas shopping, an emergency sweater drive. So if anyone out there is on Facebook, search for Scott's Emergency Sweater Drive. We, inspired by the cold snap that we just had, felt like we needed to really do something. So we're collecting sweaters. We will come to you and pick them up. We will go where it needs to be gone to get those sweaters, or coats, jackets, scarves, etc. Our goal is 500 items collected and 5 corporate sponsors. And we're about halfway to our goal on both counts. So we'd love to have more help if people can do it. And my desire for 2010 is that January through November are successful enough that I can spend December doing sweater drive number 2.
Awesome.
Because it's rewarding and it's a much needed sort of service. And in addition to that, you know, I'm doing a comic book startup. Shishkaboom.com, crowdsource comic books, really giving unknown creative talents in the comic book industry the opportunity to have a stage to shine and tell stories that otherwise won't get told in the industry.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, good. Great. Thank you so much
pleasure.
For being here. Such valuable information that I think, you know, so many of my clients just really need to kind of dial in and start asking these questions. So thank you for giving us all of your knowledge, and maybe we'll have a part 2 at some point.
That'd be fun.
All right. All right. Thanks.
Sure. See you later.